Hello, welcome to Microbyte. My name's Gavin Clark, and I'm software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog at ZDNet.
Today on Microbyte, we'll be talking about the next version of Windows, which will have an app store and it will run on ARM. That breaks 30 years of love with Intel. We're going to look at what the industry should expect from Microsoft next and what it means to you. After Elop, Ozzy, Back, and Allard, the brain drain at Microsoft continued with the loss of something significantly of its server and tools chief, Bob Muglia, after 23 years. Is this just regular churn, or is it time now to officially be worried about Microsoft? And Apple and Google have had major changes at the top, with Steve Jobs and Eric Schmidt gone. Does this make life easier for Microsoft in 2011 in the fields of consumer and search, or harder? What can you expect? So, MJ, it's been pretty busy month, really, hasn't it? It feels like we're already mid-year, the amount of news you've had to digest from Microsoft already.
Let's just pick on
Windows 8 and ARM. That's the thing people are really interested in right now. I know there was the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas, and the big news was Windows 8 is going to be on ARM for the first time after, what, about 30 years of just fidelity between Intel and Microsoft. And Mary Jo, you broke the story of Jupyter, which is a new interface for Windows 8, as it seems, which wraps in the whole concept of an application store, at least an App Store-style model in terms of applications from Microsoft. Mary Jo, talk a little about Jupyter. Tell me about it.
Yes. Jupyter, a very interesting new development, kind of somewhat unexpected, but you have to think about this. So here's the way to think about setting the stage for Jupyter. Okay, Windows, in the old days, not so old days, you used to have killer apps for Windows. Like, why do people upgrade to a new version of Windows? There was some app they really wanted that only ran on the new version. But it's been ages since that's been the case, right? Like, when Vista came out, were there any killer apps for Vista that only ran on Vista? No, not really. When Windows 7 came out, was there anything like you had to upgrade immediately to Windows 7 to get this certain app? No. So Microsoft wants to go back to the past, and they want to find a way to lock people in that way. So that's what Jupyter is all about. It's going to be, from what I've heard from my sources, kind of like a XAML UI layer on top of Windows and the Windows APIs that'll basically let you run applications that weren't made tailor-made for Windows 8 on Windows 8. So think about this. Like, we know some things about Windows 8. We know it's probably going to have an app store. It's going to be optimized for tablets and slates. But what do you do with an app store if you've got no apps? Right? What if would anyone care if there were an app store if you went and there was nothing in it? So what's a good way to have all these ready-made apps right out of the gate? If you have this layer, they're thinking, you could take apps that, say, were developed for Windows Phone 7, maybe, and put them in the App Store and have them run on Windows 8. That's how I've heard it described. So the idea is this gives you a way to bring over applications that weren't necessarily, like, built from scratch as WPF applications, Windows Presentation Foundation apps, and run them on Windows 8 and have them be what they're calling quote-unquote immersive apps. Immersive is going to be a big word with Windows 8.
What does immersive mean? Because they're always coming out with these buzzwords.
I know.
Like they for years they've been talking about the was it experience? So now it's immersive.
Immersive's the new buzzword, right? Yeah, I don't know exactly what it means other than applications that are going to work in this new model with the App Store on Windows 8. I'm thinking it means it's neither a web app nor a Windows app. It's like neither fish nor fowl, right? It's some kind of in-between thing that works best on Windows. Another one of these, you know, works better on Windows than anywhere else. We're going to find out more, hopefully, when we have a PDC later this year, which I'm counting on, though we haven't have announced. But, you know, I figure we're going to hear more about that either – you know, by the time Windows 8 comes out in a public test form, which a lot of people think is going to be fall 2011.
Well, let's put that on one side. That's fascinating because it obviously changes pretty much changes the development model for building for Windows. If you're moving to a kind of this kind of like hybrid, in some ways, I would say it sounds almost like the kind of Adobe as Air kind of model, which is kind of combines desktop and web-based apps. And you download it, and it kind of moves close towards that kind of concept people are talking about right now, which is the fusion of the internet and your desktop and having your apps living in the cloud.
Yeah.
And then, of course, so it's also got the added spin of, you know, the App Store model that you get from Apple, where you download apps to your phone or to your Mac. So that's interesting. That'd be quite a switch for a company that's spent the last, 30-odd years building apps for, you know, for that execute locally on the PC. It would obviously make sense in terms of if you could make an app run write once, run almost anywhere. If you could have it running on the Windows Phone, you could also have it running on, say, a Windows tablet, and also have it running on the Windows desktop or PC. Again, that copies the Apple model, where you can go to the App Store and have your app downloaded, or a version of an app run on your tablet, your iPhone, or your Mac desktop. Mm-hmm. So it's obviously kind of following the footsteps of Apple there. But the other big news, I think, was not such a big secret as more what people were expecting, was Windows 8 will be on ARM, which is going to potentially put Windows on a whole new slew of devices that have limited footprint, limited memory, limited power. And that's phones, that's kind of potentially tablets, and also a lot of other embedded stuff as well fridges, freezers, whatever, car systems, all these things that Windows has kind of really had struggled to be on in the past. And it's kind of interesting that now, of all times, they've decided to do it. I mean, Microsoft's always had the option to put Windows on ARM, but it's resisted, and now something's happened that they've decided, yes, ARM is the future, and it's got to be the arrival of the tablet, I'd have thought. I don't know about you, but it seems to be, there's been this discussion generally in the industry about how, you know, what's Microsoft going to do? It's a desktop-based company, it's a server-based company, what next? Where's the internet strategy, or where's the device strategy? It would seem to me that Windows on ARM would be an answer to that. It's in one way, it's more of the same, because it's not necessarily an internet strategy, it's kind of it's an operating system on more devices, but it's kind of, you know, it's a whole new world of devices. And potentially, it seems to me that if they can be successful in this model, if they can lure the ARM partners and the chip makers and etc. and the OEMs, then they've got a greenfield growth opportunity there, I'd have thought, you know, just rolling out Windows on all these devices where it doesn't live right now. I wonder what you thought about that.
Yeah, I definitely think it's aimed at things like slates and tablets, because those are the kind of devices where ARM's really getting a lot of steam right now. Mm. One interesting thing, I've blogged about this a couple times, but, you know, this, a lot of people are like, wow, they're going to just start the ARM port now, so there's no way that they're going to be ready by 2012 with Windows 8. And actually, they've been working to port Windows to ARM for a while.
Yeah.
There was a project codenamed Long Arm back in the Vista time, where I was getting tips they were trying to port Vista to ARM. Yeah. And then when Windows 7 came out, I don't know if you remember, there were a lot of questions. Was Windows 7 going to run on ARM when it came out? And Microsoft's answer at that time was, we're not putting Windows on ARM yet. So I think they've done a lot of the groundwork for this over the years. And I don't think it's going to be like, okay, now let's start the ARM port as of, CES. I think they've been working on this for a while, and they're pretty far along the path of getting Windows to run on a systems on a chip.
And importantly, they've also committed to put Office on ARM as well, which is a big, big application.
Right, because, you know, you're not going to just be able to take existing x86 apps and suddenly run them on ARM. That doesn't work like that. So you're going to have to find either brand new apps ported to the platform, or somehow recompile all the apps that you want to put on the platform. So that's a big job.
Yeah,
definitely. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens there, and whether they come out with the x86 and the ARM version at the exact same time, or if they stagger them. As usual, they're saying nothing about Windows 8. In fact, they're not even still saying it's Windows 8. They're still calling it Windows Next.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, in any rational world, you've got to think this is a good idea. The other thing that's raised the question over is, what does this do? Because you have had Windows on ARM before, but it was Windows Embedded CE. And, you know, that business is clearly big, huge question mark over that now. I mean, the costs of these big multinationals, people like Microsoft and other companies that have lots of vision, even the car manufacturers, for example, their costs come from maintaining lots of different brands, lots of different versions of product that have little differences. And that's development and the marketing costs. I mean, having something like, you know, it would make sense, I would say, to kind of just get rid of the Windows Embedded CE business. Okay, you might lose the revenue, but you're going to save the costs and rationalize everything around, you know, the ARM business, Windows 8 on ARM, then Windows 8 on Intel. The other thing I thought was interesting, Microsoft was very, very cagey about positioning this. I mean, they're very aware of the fact that this reflects, how this reflects on the Intel relationship, because those two have been so close together since the early days of the company.
Yep. It's definitely going to be, interesting, like I said, how they roll this out, how they play this, how they position it. You know, is it going to be only for slates and tablets? I think not, because I don't know if you recall, but recently Paul Otellini from Intel said, yeah, this is awesome that they're doing, you know, getting Windows smaller so that it can even run on phones. And I'm like, either that was a misstatement or he just kind of let the cat out of the bag there.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, it raised the question over Windows Phone 7 now.
Right.
I mean,
right.
So, if you're going to have it on ARM, do you need if you have Windows on ARM, do you need Windows Phone 7?
Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, does this make sense? I mean, is this a rational functioning product strategy we got here? If they're kind of coming out with Windows Phone 7 one year, then they're kind of putting it on ARM and potentially either keeping Windows Phone 7 running in parallel or even killing it down the line.
I don't think it spells death for Windows Phone at all. What I think it puts into question is what becomes the underlying operating system for the phone. So right now, the way they build the phone operating system is they take Windows Embedded Compact, which is the successor to CE, and they put a layer of stuff on top and they optimize it, and that's what is the Windows Phone OS, right? But what if they could take Windows on a chip, like Windows 8 on a chip, and then put some stuff on top of it and make that the phone OS? You know, that's a very different OS. I think it's too soon for them to do that with Windows 8. I mean, that's like next year, right? So I'll be surprised if they like kill off Windows Embedded CE. I mean, sorry, Windows Embedded Compact that fast. I don't think it's going to just like suddenly, okay, it's dead now. I don't think that'll happen. I think it'll take some time. But I think it's definitely a strategic direction and where they're going to go. The idea is let's just have Windows everywhere, like real Windows, and not all these Windows subsets that support different processors and that support different apps and support different development tools. Like for Microsoft and for its developers, the best case scenario is one Windows everywhere, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, again, it's a page from the Apple playbook of having OS X or iOS on different devices.
Yep.
There's a lot of similarity between them.
Yeah.
On that note, talking about strategic decisions and strategic missteps, Steve Ballmer seems to be running a lot of the company these days, doesn't he?
More and more. He's a busy guy.
He's getting busier all the time. I can't wait to see where he ends up at the end of the year. He's now, I ran through what he's doing now. He's now running business applications, he's running entertainment devices, and now he's running server and tools. That's three out of Microsoft's five business units, and he's responsible now for $40 billion in sales. And Microsoft makes about 63, I think, was what it made last year. So, yeah, so the latest consolidation of Ballmer power was the exit of Bob Muglia, the long-term president of Server and Tools Division, which is not a shabby little business. It's about, what's about $14 billion in annual revenue, isn't it?
It is.
So it was a bit of a, I think when we met at PDC late last year, we actually said, because we'd met in the wake of the exit of Elop and what's his name, Robbie Buck, and we were like, well, those guys, not much of a problem, but if Bob Muglia left or Stephen Sanofsky left, then I'd be worried. Well, is it time to be all right worried now, because one of those guys is gone?
Yeah, I mean, the Muglia thing, it really caught me off guard, I gotta say, and I think it caught a lot of people at Microsoft off guard from some of the emails I got. You know, the kind of the backstory on this whole thing is a few people have pointed this out to me. You know, Muglia's career at Microsoft has been kind of up and down. Mm. You remember Hailstorm, right?
Yeah.
So when Microsoft ended up canning Hailstorm, Muglia kind of took the fall for that, and he was demoted. Mm-hmm. I don't think things were ever that rosy between him and Ballmer after that. Mm. Like, Ballmer didn't necessarily like his way he was taking the business and vice versa. So, you know, Muglia stayed on. He eventually became president not that long ago. He was appointed one of the presidents.
So January like, last oh, year, I think, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. So everyone's like, okay, well, I guess everything's patched up between Steve and Bob. I guess not. what I found kind of interesting was there were a lot of different rumors swirling around about why is Bob leaving? I mean, it was pretty clear that for whatever reasons, Ballmer was going to come in and put somebody over Bob Muglia running server and tools. And Bob was like, no, you're not going to do that. Yeah. And I'm out of here. But the question is, why did he want to put somebody in over him? You know, there were a lot of rumors saying Bob wasn't with the whole cloud program. That he wasn't on board enough with the we're all in on the cloud thing. But I went back and looked at his speeches from last year, and one of the speeches Muglia gave had 100+ references to the cloud. Another had 75+ references. I'm like, well, you can't really say the guy wasn't on board with the cloud.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think another person I just talked to recently said, you know, I think Steve always thought that server and tools could be a business at Microsoft with the kind of margins that Office and Windows have. And he was frustrated that it never became that. Well, I'm again not so sure how realistic that view is. I mean, they look out there and they see Oracle making money hand over fist, but you know, does that necessarily mean that you know, the server and tools business is going to be the same? So I kind of
got a few calls from Microsoft, next Microsoft people. And the thing I heard was that Muglia was told to step down by Ballmer for apparently not moving Azure fast enough. Mm-hmm. So, which is an interesting thing, because I looked at some of the numbers on server and tools. It was growing overall, but it wasn't growing terribly fast.
Yeah.
And it was certainly not growing as fast as the Windows business, which is phenomenal right now because of Windows 7.
Yeah.
But within server and tools, it was SQL Server, I think, was the fastest growing product there, consistently fastest growing. But then they did a big server, they did a big reorg last year, and they moved the Azure cloud into, I think it was like, yes, last year, and they moved Azure into server and tools specifically to productize it and make sure, you know, it didn't cannibalize the Windows server business and the SQL server business, and to make sure that they also didn't tread on the toes of the Azure cloud business. So they had to surround them and kind of like, you know, justify them as different products. Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to me that, you know, it's not giving Bob much of a chance, less than a year, if he's not moving Azure fast enough, mm-hmm. on the one hand. But then also, you know, he's a very experienced hand. You know, he knows how to sell product. The customers respond well to him. He can talk the talk as well. He can talk from concept down to technology bits and bytes. So I don't know. And then this raises the question, you know, who is going to replace Bob? And who did even Ballmer have in mind? If he's not growing it fast enough, where do you go? And I know. We both speculated a little bit about who would replace him. And I know Amitabh Srivastavan was one guy in that frame, potentially. He's the guy who built Red Dock, which became the fabric controller for Azure. Well, you know, but he's an engineer, and he's not experienced on the overall. He hasn't got an overall experience of the server and tools business. And another guy's name came up, Bill Lang. Well, he's all server. He's SQL Server, Visual Studio, Windows Server, all the way. But he's not a cloud guy.
But
he's not an engineer. So where is this person going to come from? Unless Steve's got someone super secret lined up who we haven't heard of inside the company, or he's hiring somebody from outside the company, you know, who could that be? We don't know. Who is going to run this $14 billion business? And it's not like Azure is making any money right now. It's making zero money for it. The bread and butter remains server and tools. And in some ways, Larry Ellison's correct. He's got the correct business model for a company of Oracle and Microsoft's stature, which is to sell the server components to the people who want to build their cloud rather than providing your own cloud. You know, be the guy, if it's a gold rush, be the guy out there selling the picks and shovels, not the guy out there mining for gold.
Yep. Originally I thought Amitabh was the shoo-in for sure. Mm. but I had a couple people say to me, you know, look at the kinds of people who Ballmer wants to run big businesses like server and tools. Mm. He wants a business guy.
Yeah.
And Amitabh, like you said, he's a very technical guy. He's well liked by his team and is seen as a good manager, but is he seen as a business guy? No. So I agree with you. I don't see who it is on the inside. I actually think it's going to be an outsider. Yeah. And as we know from past history, Microsoft's record with hiring outsiders is kind of spotty. They come in, they get frustrated, they leave. So it'll be interesting. I almost started to think about maybe he's going to try to poach somebody from Oracle.
Yeah,
possible. Because I'm like, you know, that's if you look at where does, like you were just saying, where does server and tools make most of its money right now? It's in databases, right? Yeah. I mean, SQL Server is already over a $1 billion business by itself at Microsoft. So,
well, Chuck Phillips, he left last year. He's now running. He's now CEO of a CRM company based over in Atlanta. So, you know, there's an ex-Oracle guy who knows the Oracle business. And Microsoft does see Oracle as one of its prime competitors in this space, as long with VMware. Oracle and VMware were name-dropped by Microsoft as two of its prime competitors when it motivated the big reorg last year in server and tools. So you could see somebody coming over from VMware even.
Yep, yep. Or, you know, like if you think about it, now Oracle has a lot of different things on their plate. They've not just got databases, but they've got hardware. They've got virtualization. Mm. They've got Office in the cloud, right? They're trying to get into the cloud themselves now. So maybe that is a good poaching ground if you're looking for somebody who could kind of address all of the different places where Microsoft is playing in server and tools.
Will they last, though? Will they last? That's the question. Microsoft's not shy about paying the salaries, from what I understand, but the demands that are put on people is huge, and then the ability to survive the Microsoft corporate culture and the just the political infighting that goes on over at that company. You need really your tough skin.
I know.
And then the other question, I think let's kind of get into this next subject we were going to kind of come on to. It's not been a good month for CEOs in Silicon Valley, really, has it?
No.
Steve Jobs gone, well, at least indefinitely. Eric Schmidt gone, and Larry Page, who was the old CEO of Google, is now back in charge. Ballmer, we've said time and time again, there's a big question mark over how long Ballmer's got at the top of the company. And it was interesting that even the FT started realizing this. They wrote a piece earlier in January talking about, it wasn't particularly clear, it was a bit kind of speculative, but they'd spoken to people on the Microsoft board who basically were starting to express concern about Ballmer's performance. Yeah. Which is the first time I've seen that kind of article appearing in the FT. So, you know, even more pressure on him now, and now he's running, you know, three of the five business units. There's even more pressure on him now, you know. I mean, it's not like he hasn't had a decade without mistakes. You know, a lot of strategic missteps in the company he's been running. And a lot of the stuff that he's working on now is a catch-up strategy, you know, in areas that where Microsoft is Microsoft trying to catch up on search. It's coming back on the back foot of Windows 7, mobile phone, iPhone. It completely missed the boat there, and tablets, it completely laughed them off. So there's four areas where, and Internet Explorer, you know, how much they screw that up by not developing IE, and they gave ground out to Firefox and then latterly Chrome. Five areas. Well, you've got to wonder, you know, is he the right guy to run the company?
Yeah, I know. Yep. I wrote a post this just a few days ago about Ballmer makes it to year 11 as the CEO. Because, you know, as you know from us taping this podcast, I actually have always been kind of a big Ballmer fan and very bullish about him staying on as the CEO. But,
man, all these too.
Yes, he likes me so much. I haven't talked to him in 17 years, but
I hear a lot of people want to speak to him, Mary Jo.
Yes, they do. But anyway, there is a lot of pressure on him. I keep coming back to, like, who would be better, you know, because that's something you have to think about, like, who would be a better CEO for Microsoft than him? But you also have to see, okay, with all this brain drain happening at the company right now, and not just at the high levels, you know, not just like the Bob Muglias, but also like people like Brad Brooks, who was the vice president of consumer Windows. You know, he was like a very public face of Windows. He's leaving. He's going to Juniper. We got guys like Johnny Lee, who was one of the core contributors to the Kinect and a big name in Microsoft Research, who's leaving. He's going to Google. I mean, you've got a lot of churn right now. And, you know, there's always just the regular churn. And, you know, every company, especially one with 90,000 employees, always has churn, right? Yeah. But then you've got, like, people saying, I don't feel confident about the future direction. I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off. When you start hearing those kind of things from people who have a pretty high vested interest in the company, it starts giving you pause. Like, wow, if so-and-so doesn't believe in them, should I?
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. So I think Ballmer still has a grasp of what Microsoft needs to do and where they need to go and what they need to be. I don't see anybody else in the senior leadership team there who could do better, in my view. But if you're going to start losing people who are core to your ability to deliver product and stay on mission, then you got to start wondering, like, okay, is he the best guy for the job? And how long is the board, even a board who has as the top guy his best friend, Bill Gates, you know, how long are they going to just let this ride?
Yeah. I mean, he's still making a lot of money. I mean,
he is.
Was it $63 billion last year? He's comfortable. He's comfortable.
Exactly.
But you've got to ask, where could the company be if it hadn't been for all the problems of the last decade? You know, you wouldn't be fighting to catch up Google, Firefox, the iPhone, the tablet.
Yeah.
You know, from the company that was the number one maker of the world's largest company, whose software ran on, you know, majority of the world's PCs. Why is it now catching up in markets that are derivations of PCs? You know, the touchscreen phone, the touchscreen tablet, you know, etc. So anyway, well, let's that brings us on nicely to the final subject we were going to talk about was, you know, as I was saying, it's been a bad month for CEOs in the Valley. AMD lost their CEO. It seemed to set off a trend. And then Steve Jobs announced he was stepping down as CEO from Google. Significantly, unlike the last time he stepped down, he didn't indicate whether he'd be returning. So there's a lot of word on the street. This could be it, finally, for Jobs. Unfortunately, and, you know, of course, our sympathies go out to him on that basis. And then Eric Schmidt, that was a bit of a bolt out of the blue. Suddenly reorged, and Larry Page back in charge of the company, which he helped co-found back in the late 90s. Now, two companies that have been a major thorn in Microsoft's side. I mean, even from day one, Microsoft's been the crueler people amongst our readership would say copying Apple. The more kinder people might say being inspired by Apple with its GUI and its products. Google, you know, who saw that coming? They'd about five, six years where they managed to burrow in deeply on the search business while Microsoft was looking the other direction. And the last 5 years, they've been trying to catch up, with MSN, Microsoft Search, and then the Yahoo potential acquisition, and then Bing. And they're kind of flogging that one, talking about their growing market share. With these CEOs gone from these big companies, does that change the game for Microsoft, either in its ability to finally catch up to them, to outthink them, or to not have to worry about them? I mean, what do you think, MJ?
Yeah, I know. So I'll take them separately because I think it's two different cases. I think in the case of Apple, it's risky for me to say anything about Apple because I immediately get attacked because I'm a known Apple hater. Even though I have an iPad,
You've got an iPad. What are you talking about?
Aren't I an honorary member of the club now? But, you know, I think Steve Jobs stepping out as CEO and maybe not coming back, I don't think that's going to affect the future direction of Apple that much. I think all the cogs are already rolling, at least for this year and probably for a number of years ahead. I mean, he's been putting plans in place. It's not like suddenly because he's not there this week, everything grinds to a halt. Yes, he is a visionary, and yes, he is like seen as the public face of Apple, but so was Bill Gates, seen as the public face of Microsoft. And when he retired from his day-to-day, Microsoft didn't grind to a halt.
To that point, I would say, Microsoft has not been the same company. This comes back to the debate we just had. You know, has it suffered from an innovation point of view in the last 10 years the last 10 years when he stepped down, he handed over CEO to Steve, and the last few years when he stepped off day to day, has it suffered from an innovation perspective?
Yeah, I actually don't attribute anything going on with Microsoft right now to that. Everything that happened right after he left his day to day, which was like 3 years ago or 4 years ago now, everything that happened since then were things Gates had already put in place, in my view. Like he had the ball rolling on all these things, or the ball stopped in the cases where it wasn't rolling. And I think he was excellent as the public face of Microsoft, and of course he founded the company. He was a great speaker at events. Like, a lot of people found him very inspirational and great with giving like the future 10-year vision things. But I don't think Bill Gates leaving meant that suddenly Microsoft stopped innovating or suddenly Microsoft started down a wrong course. I don't. I think he already was going down the wrong courses in some cases, and Ballmer was kind of left holding the bag on those.
Yeah.
And I think Gates would have made a lot of the same decisions as Ballmer if he were still in the day-to-day operations. That's just my two cents. Mm-hmm. But so on Google, I think it's a different case. I know there are a lot of people who think Larry and Sergey, they were the founders. They were the guys who were behind the original vision, and they really love tech. And now because Eric Schmidt, the business guy, is stepping aside, that suddenly Google is going to return to its tech roots and be the old Google. I don't think it can. It's grown and changed so much since those days, since 2001 when Eric Schmidt came in. The Google of 2011 is so different from the Google of 2001 that I don't think you can even have the faintest hope that it's suddenly going to go back to the old days.
I think you're right. I think it's easy to see that. I think also that there's a question mark here over this is a very transitional time, because while Google has the desktop PC search market sewn up, mobile is wide open. So that's a big problem. And then another issue that they've really like dropped the ball on has been Chrome and delivery of Chrome. It's vaporware right now. It's supposed to be out late last year. All we had was a CR48 review machine. The OS is still not finished. So it seems, in a way, this suggests to me the real, if not going back to the days of the old Google, it would suggest to me they realize they need to sharpen up their act and get a few things sorted out. And this does suggest that this is not necessarily easy times for Microsoft. The disorganization and disruption inside Google caused by a management change does not necessarily mean fresh opportunity. Without necessarily going back to the early innovation days of Google, it does suggest maybe it's an attempt to get its eye back on the ball and deliver Chrome or kill Chrome, and decide it's Android on everything, not Android on phones and Chrome on some other stuff, which is yet to be determined. It seems like Chrome got out there, but Android's over as an idea, but Chrome became far more successful on the ground. And as far as mobile search goes, I mean, we've been to the briefings on Bing every 6 months, and they're always incrementally pushing the features forward. And mobile is the great unknown. No search company has that market sewn up right now.
True. Yep. That's true. I also think, some people say Schmidt being there was the cause of some of the things that have been happening with Google lately that people didn't like. They say Google's having its own brain drain, and a lot of people say it's because of Schmidt, Google Wave was a disaster. Well, blame Eric Schmidt. I think that's pretty oversimplified. And in a lot of cases, I can't help but wonder if we're going to see more kind of failed experiments without him being the CEO than we did with him being the CEO. Yeah. Because I think it's great to be a technology company. It's great to want to like throw a lot of cool technologies out there. But when you start having enterprise users of your technologies and you're adding things and changing things to enterprise SKUs, they don't like change in businesses. people who are cutting edge testers love change. People who work in a bank do not.
Well, the thing is that from my experience at Google and from the people I know who work there and I've spoken to, Google's got a very almost anarchic collegiate structure. It's a lot of very smart people, but not much organization. And the Google's enterprise story has never really materialized, despite the promises. Whereas, you know, Microsoft does own the enterprise, as far as I can see. Microsoft's got a strong card to play there. As far as where is the blame lie for the last few years with Google, is Eric Schmidt? Well, let's not forget, you know, Larry Page was president of products, and Sergey was president of technology. So those guys could equally have a hand in the some of this failure that's been going down, and the whole concept of let's throw technology and ideas against a wall, see what sticks. You know, ideas just haven't stuck. And the big debate, right, the big battle right now between Microsoft and Google is, let's say, the cloud. But in reality, it's a fight between which government organizations and which private companies are running Gmail and which companies are running the BPOS suite. That is the big cloud fight between those two companies right now.
Right, totally. So, yeah, I'm kind of thinking Eric Schmidt going might be a reason for Ballmer to be upbeat rather than downbeat.
Funny, because I've just said all that, and I think I'd say he's got to get his business face on, because it's not gonna, it's mixed. I think on the technology innovation side, it's possibly good. Google's still got to get its enterprise story sorted out. I saw an advert in The Economist the other day for they did a whole list of customers using their Google products, and it was interesting, because I've never seen a Google ad in The Economist which says they're now going after the kind of CIO, CEO, CFO readership that Microsoft's been playing to for all these years with an advert, but they still haven't got the product strategy sorted out. Back on Apple, I would say, well, where do the ideas come from? Is it credible that all the technology and ideas and conceptual stuff comes from one man? Possible, although there are other smart people inside Apple as well. So, but, you know, we all know what happened in the late 90s when Steve left. Apple hit a crisis. Hopefully the company's learned from it this time. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Maybe Microsoft will continue to follow, end up following Apple as it does today, and it has done for the last 30-odd years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not optimistic on the sleep front, I have to say, for Microsoft. I keep wondering if they've got something kind of in their back pocket where they're going to come out with something that's different from the iPad instead of a copy of the iPad. Kind of like what happened with phones. Like, Windows Phone 7 is not like the iPhone. It's different, but I can't imagine what they have up their sleeves right now that's going to give them enough confidence to wait till 2012 to have something in the slate space. And that seems to be the way they're going, right?
I've seen nothing. All I've seen so far is a lot of talk. I've seen, you know, as Ballmer said last year at the financial analyst meeting, they are waiting on the latest generation of Intel processors. They're waiting on those. And then you've got the big question of, well, what happens next with ARM? So I feel like they're not fully invested in this game. There's a lot of talk. There's a lot of attempt to kind of like explain what's gone wrong. There's a lot of attempt to say we're in the market, but I've not seen the evidence really, and it still remains an iPad dominated game, it seems to me. But it might change over time. Who knows? I'm sure somebody does.
I want to meet that person.
Yes. Maybe I'll go for lunch with them.
Yes.
Well, I think that kind of covers it for another episode, MJ.
Yes.
Steve Ballmer mood index. Almost wrapped up without Steve-O. So what mood do we think Steve Ballmer's in right now? Your options: frustrated, intense, all business, victorious, and monkey boy.
I'd say frustrated.
Yeah.
And that's the first time my needle has gone below on the negative side.
Yeah.
I mean, not to the point of throwing a chair, I wouldn't say. But there's a lot of anti-Microsoft sentiment inside and outside right now that I'm sure Mr. Ballmer is not loving.
I think he's got a tough skin. I think he's got to be feeling frustrated because he's just because he's got a lot of work on his hands. I mean, he's now in charge of, you know, a large part of the business, and he's got a lot of vacant spots to fill at the top of the company in prime areas. I mean, his arse really is on the line as far as the shareholders go. Mm-hmm. You know, and Wall Street. So it's a frustrating time. I feel like we're in a great holding pattern right now for the company. Windows 7 done, okay. Let's talk Windows 8. No, Microsoft doesn't want to talk Windows 8. What about Windows ARM? No, we don't want to talk about that either. You know? So what do you want to talk about? Nothing. We just want you to love us. Just for
That's why we have to talk about it for them. That's our job.
Listen, if their PR people won't like engage in conversations with us, we'll just continue to talk about them anyway. How's that? You know, the conversation's not going to stop.
Ourselves, right.
Well, I think that does about cover it this time.
Yes.
This was Microbyte. My name's Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog at ZDNet.
And as I said, this was Microbyte, brought to you by the people who bite the hand that feeds IT.